Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone. Your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, and these cards are so delightful.
Ding.
Since we know a place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Magic cards all over us. That'd be amazing.
That would be amazing.
It snowed in LA. It's all magic cards. What's up, everyone? You're watching / listening to the Command Zone podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jimmy Wong.
How is it? It's Josh Lee Kwai. So today we have a cool topic. We're going to sit down with a bunch of members of our Command Zone team. Woo-hoo! And talk about the cards we loved from this year.
Yeah, we're bringing in some positivity for the holiday season. We always talk about cards. This is not good enough, but there were a bunch of cards that were good enough.
Yeah, you know, Wizards is releasing so much product, you know, the most this year of any year ever,
ever,
right?
Ever, yeah.
And I think it can be easy to kind of get lost and forget about some of the really cool mm-hmm. stuff that came out. So I think as we were talking to all our team members about this, spoiler alert, we already recorded a lot of that part. You know, they kept mentioning cards, and in my brain, I was like, oh yeah, I kind of forgot about that card.
Yep.
Also, we do our set reviews, but we don't get a good opportunity all the time on our show to come back and kind of revisit our thoughts. And now we've seen a lot of these cards in action for, you know, multiple months. We've actually played across from them. So to sort of take the temperature again and sort of say, were we right? Because reading the cards one thing, but seeing it in play is another, right?
Yeah, and not to mention, we sometimes don't even talk about some of the cards we've been paring down our set reviews. So this is a great chance to also hear from our teammates. It's amazing to see, because everyone has different play styles as well, and we want to be representative of the entire Commander community. So hopefully we can get a sliver of that with this episode.
Yeah, there are definitely a lot of cool cards to talk about. But first, before we get into it, we have to talk about our sponsors. Channelfireball.com/command. That's our affiliate link. Yes, of course, you're going to buy magic cards. Mm-hmm. If you're still buying presents for people over the holidays, you've messed up because there's only a couple days
until it's all over. Yeah, I think the window is shrinking.
But there's something cool going on that we want to talk about, something we've never done before. At the time you're watching this, the holiday episode of Game Nights has already released.
Nice.
And on that episode, if you haven't seen, this isn't a spoiler, we're playing like very fancy decks.
Yeah, blinged out decks. There's a masterpiece deck. There's decks with just mystic, secret lairs, and there's all sorts of crazy frames and borderless decks. There's some of the craziest looking decks we've ever played on the show, for sure.
Yeah, we set ourselves this stipulation that we had to have like very fancy, we called it Blingmas, very fancy deck. So every card in every deck is a special version of a card. There's no like regular versions. So anyway, Channel Fireball actually supplied those decks to us to play with. And then they're doing a cool thing where they have started some eBay auctions where you can try and enter to win the entire decks that we played on the episode.
Holy moly.
And all the proceeds are actually going to charity. They're going to a charity called No Kid Hungry, which is dedicated to helping to solve, you know, hunger issues, childhood hunger issues in the United States. So it's a really cool thing that Channel Fireball is doing, but it also allows you to maybe get your hands on like the masterpiece deck that from Game Grumps played on the episode. And there are like a ton of masterpieces in that deck. Like it's one of the most beautiful decks you've ever seen.
All of the decks are absolutely gorgeous, and you could have a chance to win them. We'll have all of those details, of course, in the show notes. And the best part is the proceeds are going to a great cause, ending childhood hunger in the United States. So
yeah,
you know you're donating to something amazing while you're doing it. You also might just walk away with one of the best looking decks in the history of the game.
We should say they're doing it through an eBay auction, so we're saying win, but you will have to bid to try and get the deck. Yeah. It's not like a randomly chosen thing. But all those links, again, will be in the show notes. And then, of course, if you happen to win the auction for one of those decks, you're going to want to protect those cards.
Every single one of them.
Yeah, for sure. And the best way to protect all of your game pieces is with Ultra Pro products. They really do make the best stuff to protect your stuff. They make the Eclipse sleeves. They make all the Satin Tower deck boxes. You can see on the episode, we use the Satin Towers. We were very careful with these decks, of course,
yeah,
because they're some of the most valuable decks we've ever played on the show.
I saw this clip of someone that had run over their Satin Tower deck box, and they're like, thank goodness, because their deck was completely protected.
Crazy.
And the deck box was crunched up, but that thing holds up. So we, of course, trust Ultra Pro to protect our game pieces, too.
Yeah, and they also make the most awesome stuff this time of year, of course. A great gift that you might give somebody if you're a little behind eight ball on gifts is, like, if you know they're playing an Olivia deck, buying them the Olivia playmat, the Olivia sleeves, the Olivia deck box. That is a really cool thing to do, and I have a couple of decks that I've got all the pieces like that for, and every time I pull them out, you can guarantee the table is going to be like, ooh, yeah.
And if you miss the Christmas deadline, it's a great New Year's present. New year, new me, new playmat, new deck box, new sleeves, you name it.
You name it. And of course, there's a final way to support all of our content, which is directly if you go to patreon.com/commandzone. Now, patrons get all kinds of cool perks, one of which is watching Game Nights and Extra Turns earlier than the general public. Mm-hmm. We also shout out one lucky patron every single episode. And this episode is dedicated to
Sherry Luxton.
Sherry, you rock.
You do rock indeed. Okay. Move into it.
Let's get into our main topic, which is the cards we love from this year, the favorite cards from not all of our team members, but a lot of our team members. We kind of asked individual ones, like, what's your favorite card this year? That way you don't just get Jimmy and my own perspective, because, like, we tend to like, you know I'm going to like the cards that draw you cards.
You know I'm going to like the cards that kill people with damage.
So. But there are many different kinds of Magic players, so it's fun to hear from everybody. One caveat before we get into it, we want to say that these are people's favorite cards from this year, not what we think is the best, quote-unquote, or most powerful. Sometimes they may be, but not always.
Yeah, exactly. And Magic is all about what are your favorite cards, what are the most flavorful or fun, and so we're going to get a taste of that from all these team members. I can't wait.
Yeah. All right, let's get into it. All right, you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, everybody. My name is Jordan Pridgen. I'm a writer-producer here on the channel. I make a lot of the ads and help write some of the fun little intros and stuff to Game Nights. And things.
Oh, yeah. You did the... you and Jamie wrote the... What do we call it? The GPS, the car... Yeah. Us driving in the car, the vampire skit.
The how you got there.
Yeah, yeah.
Or didn't get there, I guess.
And I'm sure you've seen Jordan on Extra Turns and things like that. So, Jordan, let's talk about your favorite card from this year. Do you want to read it?
Yeah, so my favorite card from this year is Keen Duelist, which was released in one of the pre-cons in the Strixhaven set that came out. And basically, Keen Duelist is a human wizard for one and a black, and at the beginning of your upkeep, you and target opponent each reveal the top card of your library. You each lose life equal to the mana value of the cards revealed by the other player, and then you each put the card you revealed into your hand.
So it's kind of like a Dark Confidant in a weird way, but for you and another player. It's interesting that you lose life equal to what their card was, and they lose life equal to what your card was.
Well, exactly. And that's why I love this card. Because, I mean, Bob is already a good card. Like, you'd love to have a Dark Confidant in your deck, but it's also, like, super expensive. This card is not.
Yeah, I believe it's somewhere around between 50 cents and a dollar.
But here's, in my opinion, the really fun thing about Keen Duelist. And this is why I've, like, started putting it in all my black decks. Because... It's like a little mini game. Like, this is an enormous flavor win. Like, the idea is that, oh, you're dueling wizards in Strixhaven, but the way this plays out and the way I always, like, make people play it when we do it is I'm someone like, I always go, okay, who wants to duel? And then we'll both say, okay, 3, 2, 1, and both flip the cards that we get, and it'll be like, oh, I got 7. Oh, no, come on.
Do you only play this in decks that have, like, high CMC on average, or do you not care about that when you play it?
I think that it would be great to play that in a deck that has a high CMC on average, but I don't think it's, like, that big necessary. Of a deal, you know? I mean, I think this has the same sort of utility as something like a Phyrexian Arena, because it just gets you an extra card every turn, but it also comes down a turn earlier than Phyrexian Arena most of the time. And people like this. Like, if you have ever played with this, people will... fight to be the one who you are choosing to do the duel with. It's a great way to
get an extra card.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You get a fun little bit of political favor out of the whole thing. Nobody feels bad if they do take a bunch of damage off of that top card. And you usually can kind of read the room and figure out which is going to be the deck that's going to have the high CMC stuff. If you're playing with an Eldrazi player on the other side of
the
board.
Don't pick them. Yeah.
No.
I don't want to take 9.
You're going to get Kozilek and it's going to wreck you.
I like the fact that the Keen Duelist allows you to pick a different person every upkeep too. So you don't have to pick the same person over and over. So you can kind of see how the game's going too. So
yeah.
I'd say a high percentage of commander games at some point within the game is an arch enemy situation.
Sure.
Almost no commander games, there's not a player that pulls far enough in the lead that the other three kind of have to team up at some point.
Right.
And so this also is useful in all those games where you're like, hey, we need an answer. I'll help you draw one. And if you draw it, you'll use it against them, right? Deal?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and just in a pure fun standpoint, if someone is kind of falling behind, this is a great way to bring them up a little bit.
Yeah, they're missing their land drops. I can maybe help you get some land drops and get in the game, and it'll be more fun for everybody. Yeah, and you cull a little bit of favor with them as well.
Mechanically, there are definitely ways to bust this card a little bit too. You know, if you're using Scroll Racks or Sensei's Divining Tops and stuff, you can make sure that you have something on top of your deck. But from my experience, that's not something that you need.
If you have it, it'll just be better, but yeah. And anything that doubles the amount of cards you're going to draw or whatever. Oh, no, this is put it into your hand so that you don't actually draw that card.
Yeah, that's it's not actually a draw, which can matter.
Maybe it gets around the Nekusars and the things like that.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. If someone has a Consecrated Sphinx on the board, it does not draw them a whole boatload
more cards
going on there.
Yeah, that could be good, too. Yeah. This is a cool one. It's a very Jordan card. I know you like political stuff.
I love political stuff. I love things that have little interactions and fun like that. And it also I think it's a testament to how amazing and cool and fascinating Magic the Gathering and Commander is it a game that you can have little mini games within the game, you know?
Yeah.
There are cards like Goblin Game, like Keen Duelist, all these, and like Wheel of Misfortune and stuff.
Right. There's the coin flippy one too.
Yeah.
So,
and that's fun.
It's like, hold on real quick. We're going to do this little thing. Someone's going to take some damage and we'll continue with the game.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Thank you. All right. And now I'm here with Lady Danger.
Hi.
Lady Danger is one of our editors here at the Command Zone and moving into an art director role.
I'm very excited.
So you're responsible for the cool set that we have here, and all the cool sets you see on all of our stuff.
Yeah, all the cool sets you've seen since Strixhaven.
Speaking of Strixhaven.
Yeah.
Wow, good segue.
I know.
Your favorite card is from Strixhaven.
Yes.
Do you want to read it?
Yeah. So my favorite card is Culling Ritual. It's 2, a black and a green sorcery. Destroy each non-land permanent with mana value 2 or less. Add black or green for each permanent destroyed this way.
I gotta be honest. I have been hosed by this card many times since Strixhaven came out. It always seems to destroy, I don't know, feels like 50 things off my board every time.
I think it's a sleeper card. I think, it came out, everybody got hyped about it, and then everybody has since forgotten about it.
I haven't forgotten.
And, I mean, to no surprise, I've picked a Witherbloom Golgari card.
That's actually true. I didn't even think about that.
But it's actually so, so, so good. So you can utilize it early game if you're, everybody's kind of ahead of you and they're playing Mana Rocks and they've got their Signets out and you're like, oh, well, I don't really have it, but you got just enough mana to play it and you just destroy everybody else's stuff and then you get to put about a big banger out with all of the mana that you gain from it.
Yeah, the mana you gain, I think, is a part about the card that's easy to miss.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of harkens a little bit to me in my mind to Vandal Blast, but often it takes your whole turn to Vandal Blast. And so if there's only 2 or 3 things to get, you don't often want to cast Vandal Blast because it's I'm going to spend my whole turn. Yes, I'll destroy 3 things, but it just feels like then I do nothing and then I pass the turn and they get to repopulate the board before I do. Whereas Culling Ritual is often destroy 3 or 4 things, but then it's almost like it was free because I get all that mana back.
Exactly. You get to utilize that mana immediately. And I play my Korvold deck. Everybody knows my Korvold deck here.
We all know it.
It's not broken. But a card like this in mid-game where I've populated a ton of tokens out and I can use them as sack fodder, so I automatically get a benefit from that, plus destroy everybody else's stuff. And while you're not going to get their big cards, you are possibly going to get pieces of stacks pieces and things like that, which can really slow somebody down. And 9 times out of 10, if you put this down and you resolve it and you get a good chunk of mana, you're probably going to win the game. The other really cool thing is it's great in other formats. Like, it's good in Commander, but you can also use it in like Modern or Pioneer. And it was even good in Standard.
Yeah, because in those formats, there's actually a lot of, most things are two mana value or less, yeah. Almost at CMC. I like what you said there. And actually in Korvold, I could see situations where you don't even sack your stuff because you're just like, I get a mana per thing that mm-hmm. dies. So it turns into a Phyrexian altar almost. And then you just go straight into like a Torment of Hailfire. I've had this happen to me where somebody's like, boom, kill everything, get 30 mana, Torment of Hailfire. And also all the stuff got destroyed, so you don't have anything to like sacrifice to the Torment of Hailfire. So you're just done. I also like that it's in green, because one of the things that hurts the most when you get Culling Ritualed is it takes all your mana rocks.
Yes.
So all the signets are gone, the soul rings are gone, everything like that. So it can set you all your ramp back. But because you're playing green by definition, if you have this card in your deck,
yeah.
a lot of your ramp is lands.
Yeah, so you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, so you're like, oh, I sacked my Sakura Tribe Elder and I played a Rampant Growth and into a Cultivate into this. And so I get to keep my advantage because that was all in lands.
Yes.
And all you spent your turns like going like, you know, Arcane Signet into Izzet Signet or whatever, yeah. and it's like, nope, now you're just back, you know, you're set two turns behind, but I'm still cool.
I love that about it, and like you pointed out, it is green, so like you're not really losing too much, and like, let's remember, it will also destroy your things yeah. that are two, so, you know, be careful when you are playing it, but I mean, if you're playing against any kind of token deck, because you have to think, like tokens, they're nothing, they're gonna be destroyed, you're gonna hose anything that's like goblins, which, you know, they just populate so much, and just boom, done, out of here, game over, sorry not sorry.
That's how I would define playing against Lady Danger, actually. Yeah. Sorry not sorry. All right, really good pick, Culling Ritual. Take a look at it if you're not already playing in your decks.
Oh, and it's cheap, it's only like $3, so you should pick it up. channelfireball.com
/command. good plug. Okay, do you want to introduce yourself just before we begin here?
Hey, everyone. I'm Murph. You've probably seen me around here before. I'm an editor on Game Nights, Extra Turns. Been around the block, been here for a little bit, so.
Murph is also our resident hipster, likes to play sort of off-the-beaten-path cards. And you're not going to disappoint this time, Murph. Of all the cards I think that everyone's going to talk about, this is maybe the only one I actually have not seen in play since the set review.
That means you haven't played against me enough.
I guess not. Are you playing this card a lot?
I haven't been playing it a lot, but I slotted it into a deck. And
of course, the deck on deck.
The deck on deck.
Which is your Esper lands deck. Without further ado, you want to talk about your, or just let everybody know what the card is we're talking about?
Yeah, so the card is Deck on Shadow Slayer. It's 3 mana, a white, a blue, and a black. It's a planeswalker. Comes into play with the amount of loyalty counters equal to the amount of lands you have. You can +1 to surveil 2, -3 to exile a creature, and you can -6 to put an artifact card from your hand or graveyard onto the battlefield.
All right, so why is this your favorite card of 2021?
Well, first of all, I love the flavor. I love Dakon as a character. I have a whole deck built around it and just love it. So the second I saw this card, I knew I had to play it.
Dakon Blackblade was the first rare that I ever opening in a pack.
Well,
So there you go. I already like it. Okay.
But the reason that I like it is because it scales. Planeswalkers have like this inherent, I wouldn't say disadvantage, but
disadvantage.
Yeah, I don't really like playing planeswalkers or playing against planeswalkers in Commander because they always have that ultimate ability that planeswalkers just keep ticking up and they seem inevitable. They seem like, well, I guess I have to get rid of that. I have to take care of it. Otherwise, I'm just going to lose the game.
Right.
And as a result, they're like a slog to play against. But with Dakon, he has the ability to come in with the amount of loyalty counters equal to the number of lands you have. So you play him early game. He's not a huge threat. He only comes in with like maybe 3 loyalty or something. You can blow up a creature, maybe get some surveil value. But then later on in the game, if you play him, you top deck him, you got 8-9 lands, something like that. Boom, you can just like remove a couple creatures in a row, something like that. And his big fat loyalty ability at the end.
His ultimate, technically.
Well, his ultimate is not that impactful, so people don't really see him as a threat.
Right, they don't see, like, I have to kill Dakon, because it doesn't seem like, and by the way, I'll reread the ultimate, which is -6, you may put an artifact card from your hand or graveyard onto the battlefield.
Like, it's cool.
Yeah, it's not, like,
but it's not game-ending.
Yeah, it's not probably going to be game-ending, because, you know, cheating an artifact into play, even if it's Blightsteel or something like that, is often like, okay, fine, you're going to maybe kill one player, maybe not even, maybe just have to wait till your next turn, so it doesn't feel like, yeah. If I don't kill Dakon and you untap with it, we lose.
Yeah, and it's 3 mana, so you can get it back with like Sun Titan and stuff. Yeah, I really like it a lot.
Yeah, that is interesting in that I didn't really think about it, I think, and I don't remember talking about this card. I might not have done the set review for the Modern Horizons in the 99 stuff, but the fact that like playing it on three is fine because you can just, it's a three mana removal spell.
Yeah.
Or you could surveil if it looks safe out there, which often it does on three.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that like you can play it and get rid of, I don't know, a Timna or something seems like it would be a good usage of a card in that case.
Yeah.
And there are those scenarios where you play it, it's safe, you just tick it up and now it's at four and can remove something and live and like you're in a pretty good spot there. And then later in the game, like turn six, seven, eight, now it actually is a, you know, regrowth effect for, well, better than regrowth, I suppose.
Definitely better than regrowth.
Yeah, like a resurrection effect for an artifact or, you know, cheat something into play. So basically says, well, whatever the highest cost artifact in your hand is, it's only going to cost three mana because that's what Dakon costs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And oftentimes in those scenarios, will also still stick around and still be there as like a, you know, well, you got to at least expend some resources to get rid of it or I'm going to start getting value out of it.
Yeah. And design-wise, I just really love it because like it escapes the Oko problem where Oko was just printed with too high of a loyalty. So it comes out on three, has like seven loyalty. If you plus it. Dakon, if he comes out on three, he comes out in with like three or four loyalty, and you're fine with that. He scales.
I do like how the surveil ability works with its minus six too. So again, if it's safe, you're probably going to play this in decks that like are going to use their graveyard in some way.
Yeah.
Not many people have a lands, Esper, lands deck like you do.
True.
Murph, so.
But I like that because it's only three mana, it can fit in a lot of control decks because control decks relatively want to play a lot of lands, relatively want to play a lot of mana. And so Dakon's just pretty good in those types of decks at any point in the game, I think.
Yeah, if you think of it as worst case scenario, a three mana removal spell, then it gets a lot better, right? Because that's the worst case scenario. And now the best case scenario is three mana removal spell plus additional value over the course of the next three or four turns. Or, you know, like we said, regrowth and artifact. So
I was actually surprised that this would be my favorite because I really don't like playing with planeswalkers very much. I don't put them in decks very often. So having one of my favorite cards from this entire year be a planeswalker, good on you, WotC.
It might really be like because Dakon is just I mean, cool as a
definitely
character.
Definitely that too. But I really, really like the design.
All right. Thanks, Murph. All right. We are here with Game Night's editor, post-production supervisor, sometimes director.
Sometimes director. Sometimes DP.
Sometimes DP. Always DP these always. Days. It's Jake Boss, everybody.
Hey. We're all so excited to see him here. It's me.
So, Jake, we're talking about our favorite cards from 2021. What is yours?
Mine is Mystic Reflection. This card was from Kaldheim, so very early on in the year.
Yeah, you're going back all the way, 11 months or so. 10 months, whatever. Let me read the card real quick. Mystic Reflection is one in a blue for an instant. You choose target non-legendary creature. The next time one or more creatures or planeswalkers enter the battlefield this turn, they enter as copies of the chosen creature. And it has Foretell. For a blue, that means that during your turn, you may pay two generic mana and exile this card from your hand face down, and then you can cast it on a later turn for its foretell cost. So this just costs blue if you foretold it, which almost always happens, I've found, with this card. It's just put it down, and then later, like, aha, get you. So you want to explain why it's your favorite card?
Well, I love token decks. That is my thing, is forcing Bruticlad into any cool deck. I've always got a new Bruticlad brew going around. So having an interesting token copy of a creature is vital for that strategy. So since Mystic Reflection lets you take one of the tokens that are going to be generated, let's say I've got a 1/1 token coming into the battlefield.
Yeah.
While that effect is on the stack, I'll cast Mystic Reflection and say the next time any creature would enter the battlefield, it'll become, let's say, an Avenger of Zendikar.
Okay, that's the one everybody talks about. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Avenger of Zendikar, there's a couple of ways to play that too. Let's say you're just casting this Avenger of Zendikar. You've got 9 tokens that are all going to come in. Mystic Reflection's going to see all of them. So you'll say, hey, let's take all of these plant tokens that are going to come in, those are going to be Avengers of Zendikar as well. Ba-bam!
Yeah, Avengers is the big one that people talk about with this card. The important thing to note is that it is the next time one or more creatures or planeswalkers enter the battlefield this turn. So it's one instance of a creature or multiple creatures coming in, but they have to happen all at once. So if a card creates 5 tokens all at once, then you will create 5 copies of the thing that you've chosen. Now, if a card instead were to say, every time you do this, create a token, then it would only create 1 token at a time, and only the first one of those will become the creature that you've targeted as the non-legendary for this spell. That's why Avenger of Zendikar is so awesome. Let's say you have 7 lands out. You cast Avenger of Zendikar. It enters the battlefield. Its trigger goes on the stack, says you have 7 lands. I'm going to create 7/01 plants. You, in response to that trigger, cast your Mystic Reflection, targeting your Avenger of Zendikar, and now those seven plant tokens, because they're all entering at the battlefield at the same time, will make seven Avengers of Zendikar. And each of those seven will make seven more plant tokens, so you'll end up with 49 plant tokens and eight Avengers of Zendikars. Yeah. And then if you played a land, you would get 8 plus 1 counters on your plant tokens, or 16 if you played a fetch land.
It's a crazy amount of value. That's the ideal situation.
Yeah.
But there are plenty of unideal situations that are still pretty solid with this card. Like, let's say you're just casting a Land of War Elves. You've got this foretold. You spend the extra mana. Now I can have whatever the biggest and nastiest thing on the board is.
Yeah, but, so like someone's got an Elishnorn or something, and your Land of War Elves would normally just die. Oh, no, Elishnorn is legendary. You couldn't do that, actually. Sorry.
That's important.
Yeah, let's say there was, okay, whatever, a Blightsteel Colossus or something is out there.
Yeah, I would say one of my favorite stories that I've ever had with this card is around Udvara Hellkite. So I had a creature, I had a token coming into the battlefield. I'm playing my Bruticlad deck. And I say, okay, the next time a token would come in, it's going to be an Udvara Hellkite. It lands. Then I use Bruticlad to convert all my tokens into Udvara Hellkites. They all swing out, and then it's an insane amount of math. I end up with like 60 dragons on the board at the end. Like, this card is just nuts. And that's only when you're using it on your side to benefit you.
Right.
There are plenty of great ways to hose your opponent. Let's say Josh is casting an Ulamog, and I say, wait a second, Mystic Reflection. The next time a creature would enter, it's going to be a copy of a 0/1 plant token. Now, Josh won't get his Ulamog giant body.
Right. I'll still get the cast trigger because I did cast an Ulamog, but it
won't
be...
Yeah, maybe that's the bad example.
It won't exile the 20 cards off the top of the library or whatever. Yes, I've actually seen it used this way very effectively. You know, now this card's been around for almost a year. I remember seeing somebody use it to just... Somebody cast like a Korvold, and it was their commander, but it was going to be like one of those turns where they already had everything set up, and it was looking like, oh, you cast Korvold, draw a million cards, do the Korvold thing, it'll take 20 minutes, but we're all going to die probably.
Right.
And the person said, nah, Mystic Reflection, I'm just going to turn that Korvold into, you know, I think it was a Vile Smasher was on the table. No, that's not Lendry. It was Birds of Paradise or something.
Yeah.
It was something that just didn't matter. And like, yeah, the person could sack their token and get it back to the command zone, but now they couldn't recast it, and like it basically saved the whole table. It sort of worked as a removal spell in that instance.
Yeah, yeah. Because easily when you remove something, you could just send it back to the command zone. When you change that permanent to something else, that kind of gets around it. It's like a pseudo-tuck type effect where we're just hosing our opponents a little extra for playing Korvold.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Korvold has got a lot of sack outlets, but if it's a deck that doesn't, right, then it could easily just be like, well, okay, crap, now I have this copy of this creature, a Birds of Paradise, and like, yeah, it's a little bit of value to me, but I actually have trouble getting that creature killed and to get back to my command zone if I don't have a sack outlet and I'm not a deck that has a lot of those. So Mystic Reflection does a lot of work in a lot of different ways. I really like it.
Yeah, it's a solid card, and I think it's a reasonable price.
So if you're not playing it, you know, think about it. It's easy to forget about these cards, especially from the beginning of the year. So much stuff has come out.
Yeah.
So I like revisiting this. Also, we talk about cards. We said this in the intro, but we talk about cards on the show in the context of like set reviews. And then we rarely have a chance to go back and revisit and be like, how is this card actually played out now that we've seen it, you know, in the wild a number of times. And this card's definitely in many different ways been useful, and I think, you know, deserves a place in a lot of decks.
Yeah. One last thing, the foretell cost on it. I think it's great to have many foretell cards that are good in Commander. Like, let's say it could be a Doomscar.
Right.
It could be a Mystic Reflection. Like, you don't necessarily foretell something and they know exactly what's coming.
So, yeah. Although, if they're in blue and not in white, then Mystic Reflection is what I'm guessing.
Yeah.
But sometimes there's just not a lot you can do about it.
But I think it kind of makes it a fun part of the game, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
It's a fun experience, so...
All right, thanks, Jake. All right, and now I am here with the fabulous Ashlyn Rose.
Hey, everyone.
Ashlyn is our brand manager here at the Command Zone, but you have a favorite card from 2021 that you want to talk about.
Yes, I do, and that card is Pest Infestation.
Ooh, let me read it real quick. It's a green mana and XX. So XX green for a sorcery. Destroy up to X target artifacts and or enchantments. And then you create twice X 1/1 black and green pest creature tokens with. Whenever this creature dies, you gain one life. It's a little bit confusing when I read it that way. Let's say X is equal to 2. That means this spell will cost you 5 total mana. You'll destroy up to 2 artifacts and or enchantments. And then make 4 pest creature tokens.
Yes.
Okay.
There's a lot that happens with
this. There's a lot of math involved in this card. Yeah. It is up to, so you do not have to have, if you were able to make X is equal to 7 or something, if you had a ton of mana, you don't have to have 7 artifacts or enchantments on the battlefield, to make you'd be like, I'm gonna destroy whatever's out there, and then I want 14 pest yes. tokens. Yeah, okay.
You still get them.
Yeah,
and it's glorious.
And it's glorious. So why is this your favorite card? Yeah.
So this is my favorite card right now, just because when you play with a card that you didn't think would be as satisfying as it is. And then it's super satisfying to play with. And like every time I've drawn it, it's just been like, yes.
I get to destroy everything that I don't like and I get to make pests.
Yes, exactly. Like I get to wipe the board, or I get to clear all these annoying mana rocks, all these artifacts, and make a bunch of pests. Or I play Essex, so I get to make a bunch of pests, quote unquote, and then turn them into a bunch of other really terrible things.
Right. So in Essex, you're not making pests. You're making, I don't know, what's the coolest thing you've made with it?
Avenger of Zendikars.
That card keeps coming up.
And yeah, then it just gets worse and worse.
Yeah, then the Avengers. Yeah, that seems quite good. I think too, our format has gotten a little faster, and one of the ways that's gotten faster is there's a lot more sort of two mana rocks. So in general, it feels like there are more artifacts and enchantments early in games than there used to be, which makes this card, I think, more effective. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And this card scales really great into late game, but mm-hmm. early game, it's still really good, because even if you're playing it for the cheapest amount, which is what, 3?
Yeah.
It's still a 3 mana naturalized short sorcery speed, but you do get to hit an artifact or enchantment, and you still get 2 bodies with it.
Yeah, and sometimes somebody just plays something really scary. They're just like, it's doubling season. I'm just going to get rid of it,
yep.
and I'm going to make one pest, and I'm going to go on about my life. And a 3 mana removal spell is not the worst case scenario. You know, something that we, Jimmy and I, have found over the years is that in your mind, you think there's a lot of token creators in green that are just like, pay a green and X and make that many 1/1s. But there's actually not that many cards that do that. And that... It's the cost of this is templated weird, but that's what this is. If you pay green and X, because it does twice X, so if you say green and well, I guess you can't do odd numbers, and that would be the problem.
Yeah.
But if you say I have, you know, 7 mana total, that a green X card would make 6 1/1s. Well, this can do that. Green 3 and 3 will make 6 1/1s. And that actually is powerful in a lot of decks, to just be able to say, pump all my mana and make that many 1/1s. So I like that aspect of it as well, not just destroying things. Like it forwards the token game plan.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to forward your tokens. It's great for any type of deck that cares about tokens. You know, Wart the Raid Mother makes a bunch of tokens. It's great in that as well. You have Azuri, who also likes having a bunch of tokens. A
bunch of little things, yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's great.
So I think it's a really fun card, and I feel like it's kind of one of the low-key ones that people aren't expecting in a game, especially late game, and it can just be nasty late game.
Yeah, because you just have a ton of mana, and I'd say the things that tend to beat us are not just like creatures. There's a lot of artifacts and enchantments. They're involved in synergies or combos, and you just get to be like, break all that down. Mm-hmm. Just get rid of all of it.
Yeah, yeah, especially when someone's running away with their like little enchantment artifact combo over in the corner there, and no one has a way to interact with it, especially if you're in like a certain color. Like you're like, I'm in Rakdos over here. I can do nothing to affect the board right now.
Do you have an interesting combo I see on your little notepad here with another new card. And I know this other card was one of your other favorite cards from this year. And it is Liquimetal Torque, which is a 2-mana rock, which we already mentioned. There's a lot more of those. But you can tap it to turn something into an artifact. That's really interesting, because now you can get rid of a creature if you want to, or something like that. A planeswalker, just turn it into an artifact, and then now you can target it with Pest Infestation.
Destroy it as well. Turn it into another little wiggly creature.
That's pretty cool. That increases the utility of this card. So, all right. Very cool card, Pest Infestation. If you're not checking it out, maybe you need to try it.
Yeah. Definitely add it to your Essex decks.
They're definitely out there. It's not an expensive card either. It's like $250 or something like that. So you can definitely find it at channelfireball.com/command. All right. Hello, everyone. This is Gaurav. Gaurav, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, everybody. I'm Gaurav. I am an editor here at the Command Zone, mostly doing the ads and special projects. And I'm very happy to be here with you, Josh.
Yeah, Gaurav is the editor behind things like the GPS, the Crimson Vow, Jimmy and I in the Car, the Vampire Sketch, as well as, at this point, Game Night's Holiday Blingmas episode has come out. So you are the editor behind the sort of animated storytelling storybook.
I'm working on it literally as we speak.
Yeah, yeah. He's the editor of that to you, but to him, he's still working on it.
I'm still doing it.
All right, Grob, let's talk about your favorite card from 2021. It's actually, you're looking at it right now if you're watching the video, if you pay attention.
Yes, it's up here. Yeah, this side, I think, usually, but maybe it'll change the sides. I don't know. It's up now, but the World Tree, let me read it out loud real quick. The World Tree is a land, not a legendary land for some reason. The World Tree enters the battlefield tapped. Not great. But it taps for 1 green And as long as you control six or more lands, lands you control have tap and add one mana of any color. So a pseudo chromatic lantern is pretty good.
Very good.
And it has a little more text on there that says for double Wooburg, you can tap this land and sacrifice it to search your library for any number of god cards, put them on the battlefield, and then shuffle your library.
So not only does it sort of fix all of your mana, at a certain point, if you've got enough mana out, you basically need 11 mana, 10 plus the world tree.
Yes, yeah.
Because you do have to tap and sack the world tree. It just says, go get all the gods that you've got and, you know, put them out there.
And I've built an Oops All Gods deck, which I have played on Extra Turns, and basically... Actually,
I think the Extra Turns... Yeah, yeah, it's out, right? The one that...
That one's out. Yeah, so basically, if I play this card, anytime I'm playing my Oops All Gods decks, basically... Anytime I put this card on the table, whether or not I have 10 lands, I have to inform the table. I feel like I have the world tree. And then they'll know what that means. Like, that just means if I get to 11, I win the game. I've never had to, like, anytime I use the world tree, no one ever plays it out. They're like, okay, I scoop.
They don't just say, well, okay, let's see what happens. Get all your gods and let's see what happens.
It's never happened. They always
How many
just
gods
say,
do you
scoop.
Have in the deck?
Like 35 or something. Okay. Like, there's a lot. There's a lot in there. Yeah. So unless
do any of those gods give the other gods haste? I guess Xenagos would.
Xenagos would, but there's also Purphoros. So if I, as soon as I get Purphoros out, they start activating each other, and then it
well, they all enter at the same time, so they would enter as creatures because you would have the devotion, and so it would just kill everyone at that point just from Purphoros.
Just from Purphoros alone, it would do a ton of damage. But at that point, yeah, you basically win the game. But I've never had to play it out, so I actually don't know. I assume I win, and they're nice enough to let me win, but. Yeah, this card is amazing because in any five-color deck, gods or not, you probably want this card. Like, it's fixing your mana after six lands. Like, that's very good.
Yeah, and, I'd say it's worth playing just for that.
Yeah. Right?
In five-color decks. Maybe even four-color decks.
Yeah. I know most people are kind of down on Chromatic Lantern or whatever, but this is a pseudo-Chromatic Lantern in the land slot. It's good.
Yeah, I think Chromatic Lantern, I'm one of the people that's down on it. The reason that I'm down on it is because it's an inefficient card to play outside of that effect. It's not that that effect is not something you would want. It's that I don't believe that three mana on a rock is worth that effect. So totally the fact that this comes in a land... Mm-hmm. That, I think, changes the equation totally and makes it so that, like, can I play a couple of tapped lands in my five-color deck? Yes, I can. In fact, I'll often play a tri-land or two, maybe three or four even, in a five-color deck. So I would replace a tri-land with this. And this just basically says, hey, once I get to turn five or six, you know, because I have green in there, I'm probably going to ramp out an extra land. Now I don't have to worry about my colors. And I think that's worth
it. Yeah, exactly. And even if you're not playing gods, like, you can still threaten cards that are in your deck, like changelings. Like, you can pull all the changelings in your deck because this triggers that. Like, that's still very good.
Yep.
Even if you have like three or four, that's three or four creatures out on the board just for you. Like, that's great.
There are cards also that will make all the creatures in your deck into gods if you want to.
Sure,
so there's definitely combos like Conspiracy is a card that does this. Mm-hmm. There's also cards that will change all of the creatures that you have in your deck to become any creature type, or you can choose a creature type. So there's Maskwood Nexus, and then there's Arcane Adaptation. So that allows you to play non-god cards in a deck and basically say, well, they're all gods now because that's what I choose or whatever, and allows you to kind of break world tree in that way, where it's like, okay, now I'm going to get, you know, all my ETB creatures in my rune deck with it or something like that. Oh, I couldn't go to rune deck because it's five color, but you know what I'm saying.
Sure. But I mean, that's a sneaky thing you can do is in a five color deck, be like, I don't have any gods in this deck when you play world tree, and then you play all your changelings or cards like this out of it, and they're like, oh, okay, all right. It only works once, but it's fun the one time it works.
I just realized that I said it could go in four color decks when it cannot do that because it has Wurburg on the card. I'm forgetting about the activated ability, so please forgive me if you've been shouting at your screen. Okay.
They paused immediately and started commenting.
Yeah, so they didn't even hear me say that part. Yeah, okay. Well, we get excited sometimes. That's how that happens. Okay. Thanks, Groff.
Yeah.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect
instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Do you follow automotive news, or do you just like cars and want to see what the heck's going on? Well, then you might like Donut Media's new podcast, The Big Three. Hi, I'm James Pumphrey, and every week, me and my co-host slash two of my top five friends, Nolan Sykes and Joe Weber, unpack the latest and greatest in automotive news and trends on The Big Three. You'll also get a lot of laughs, hot takes, and personal insight on cars from the biggest car guys in automotive media. So, whether you're a hardcore enthusiast or just a person who goes, that's a good-looking car, check out The Big Three, available wherever you get your podcasts, or you can watch the full videos at Donut Podcasts on YouTube.
Okay, and now I'm here with Jamie Block, who is a staff writer here with us at the Command Zone. You do a lot of the ads. Also, Jordan and you teamed up to write the what we called the GPS skit for Crimson Valve, Jimmy and I in the car and the vampire thing, and also the Blingmas animated skit.
Yeah, no, it's been a lot of fun. Great to, you know, ads are fun, sketches are fun, more stuff coming down. It'll be a good time.
Yeah, we got a lot in the pipe, a lot planned that Jimmy and Jordan are working on. But today we're talking about your favorite commander card from 2021. I got to say, this is a card that has hosed me on multiple occasions. Very powerful. You want to go ahead and read it?
Yes, it is Ink Shield, and Ink Shield says, prevent all combat damage that would be dealt to you this turn. For each one damage prevented this way, you create a 2-1 white and black Inkling creature token with flying, which was the Silver Quill creature token from Strixhaven.
Yeah, 2-1 flyers for each damage prevented. So if I swing, as each damage prevented, it's not
each attacking creature like Arachnogenesis, which is sort of like the spiritual predecessor to this card.
Yeah, this card ends up being way better than Arachnogenesis. It also only prevents damage to you, not all combat damage.
Yes, notably the thing that I did not read off is it does cost 5. So yeah.
It's 3 a white and a black.
Yes, so that is where Arachnogenesis has a slight advantage, as you don't have to hold up 5 mana to do it. But for all the things that you could hold up 5 mana to do, Ink Shield is one of the best.
Yeah, the fact that it is to the damage and not to the amount of creatures ends up being a huge thing, and something I think I probably misevaluated the first time I saw this card. Because you don't often get attacked with like 5+ creatures in Commander. Like, it happens, but it's not a thing that happens all the time. But you often in games, there'll be a point in which you just have to eat 8 or 9 damage. You know, just like, two things are coming in, you don't want to lose a thing, you're at 30. And when they go, oh, okay, fine, make 9 2-1 flyers, it's like, oh, crap. Like, that is a big swing. And then, of course, there are the times where it's like, you are going to die, and it's 50+ damage prevented, and they make 50 2-1 flyers.
Yeah, no, it can scale from good to great, basically. It's never going to be bad. The one bad situation with this card, maybe, is you leave it up because you're excited because you think you're going to get attacked, and then maybe you get attacked for 3.
Right.
And it's just does not, like, it does not
do
feel
you do
worth
it or
it.
Not.
Exactly.
Yeah, have you been caught in those situations where, I mean, you have to play injured or play, you know, you have to sort of, I think you have to do some table posturing to really maximize this card, which might be fun.
Yeah, I mean, it sets up sort of a kind of deal that has become my favorite to make recently, whereas if you do blank, I will kill that other player. So I recently had a game where someone could attack someone for 20. And I said, if you attack me for 20, I'll kill this other person. I didn't say how exactly. Right. Some people might have guessed, but it worked. And, you know, the sort of key thing to be sneaky about there is you don't mention, in addition to killing that other person, one turn later, I'll probably kill two of you.
I'll still have my 2-1 flyers, by the way, after that's over. Yeah, it's to the point where I think you have to be very suspicious if a player is in white, particularly, and doesn't seem that worried, even though you have lethal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in addition to this card, there's Selfless Squire, which is sort of another spiritual predecessor to this card, in that it's another one that counts the amount of damage prevented, but that just gives you one big creature, whereas all these 2-1s flying are much better. But to sort of go back and answer the question of has it ever been stranded, yes. But sort of the deck that I run it in, where it sort of fits the best, I have it in a couple decks, is one that's pretty focused on holding up mana, either to counter spells or do other stuff at instant speed anyway. So I'm used to it at that point with that deck. If a card gets stranded in my hand, sort of no big event happened, it's kind of just the deck operating as usual. So that is the thing, is, you know, you want to put this in a lot of decks, but you do want to put it more in decks that are focused on, like, leaving mana up.
Yeah.
Decks that aren't trying to just, like, tap out on your own turn, go big.
Right, yeah. I would think it would be the most effective in decks that have other things they could do if you do not get attacked. But I also think there's something to be said for, like, you can kind of play the injured, like, oh, no, don't attack me. It's going to be bad. I don't have anything I can play. You know, you can kind of, like, do a little bit of acting and get, you know, sucker people into attacking you and then get the advantage. Jimmy likes to pull that trick a lot. And he's pretty good at it because, well, Jimmy's an actor.
I like to pull that trick. I'm bad at pulling that trick, in part just from an acting perspective, and in part because I like the card too much that I kind of want people to know that I have it because I'm just proud to be running it. So I'll always be hinting, you could attack me. Something might happen. And then immediately people ask me, is it Ink Shield? And I say, maybe.
Okay, well, you got to work on your poker face a little bit.
I love the card.
Yeah, it's still a cool card. All right, thanks, Jimmy.
Thank you.
Okay, and now I am here with Shauna. Shauna, you're one of our resident competitive-leaning players.
The only resident CDH player, just saying.
Yeah. Okay, fine. I dabble a little bit, though. It's not like we don't have people here that would
I've been
play
trying games. To leech into the pool a little bit to try to get people to try it, but
we did have a very fun CDH game the other night.
It was good.
Okay, so I'm interested to hear, because you have sort of that perspective on the format, what your favorite card of 2021 is. And I'm looking at it now. It's not a super surprise. I do think this card's very good.
Nope.
You want to read it?
So my favorite card is Ragavine, Nimble Pilferer. So this comes to no surprise to anybody who frequents CDH, but anybody who even plays other formats, Legacy, Standard, anything like that, this card is a monster, and it's been hitting pretty every format, and it's been hitting it really hard. So it's a 1-mana, 1-red mana, legendary creature, Monkey Pirate. It's a 2-1, and it says, whenever Ragavan Nimble Pilferer deals combat damage to a player, create a treasure token and exile the top card of that player's library. Until end of turn, you may cast that card. It also has dash, which for 1 colorless and a red, you may cast the spell for its dash cost. If you do, it gains haste and is returned from the battlefield to its owner's hand at the beginning of the next end step, which I feel like I don't personally use the dash cost much. Maybe that's because I'm playing mainly CDH and not other formats. But
there's some combo-y stuff you can do with it, but I've mostly seen people just play it out on turn one and use it as like a Birds of Paradise early, and then it draws you cards. Like, that's the crazy part about this thing.
There's nothing wrong with this card. It's literally the biggest engine you can drop on turn one, and I've definitely been looking up some stuff about, you know, just like...
Yeah, she brought notes.
I brought notes.
You're more prepared than the other students. I like this.
Listen, this card is basically insane, and I wanted to kind of... I've told you before, I'm pretty bad at comparing, like, the power level of cards at base level, so doing a lot of research online, I've seen a bunch of articles comparing this guy to, like, a Death Threat Shaman.
Yep.
Not necessarily to a Soul Ring, but because in general base level value, I think Soul Ring is better.
It's probably the most powerful card in the history of Magic. So,
and it's consistent.
Comparing anything to that means that you're in the upper echelons of power that exist, though, right? Even if you're not like, whatever, we can mince words and say which one is more powerful. If it's if it's even a conversation, then you know the card is insane. Deathrite Shaman is another card that I would put among the most powerful of all time. So the fact that it's in those conversations, I see you have Birds of Paradise, which we talked about. Oh, another card that I would say just ubiquitously always been powerful.
Yeah.
You put Esper Sentinel down, which is another one drop. So this is in that class of card that's just super efficient.
Yeah.
And just, you know, yeah, every time Ragavan hits the table, you're just like, I can't believe it does all that.
It does everything. And I was having this conversation earlier where what Ragavan does that Sol Ring doesn't is it makes an impact. Like, Sol Ring's been out since Commander's been out. It's been out before Commander. So ever since we started playing Commander, we see a Sol Ring in turn one, we know, all right, target that player, that guy's going to get out of hand quick. I got to keep my eye out over there. But I think Ragavan hits the floor and he hits it hard. He hits it because you know that this will spiral out of control. It's not going to level off because I feel like you get to maybe turn 5 or 6. You have enough mana regardless. Your Sol Ring is helpful, but it's not as crazy as the first couple turns. Ragavan, if it sticks around, it's going to keep building up that value and it's going to keep stealing that value from other players' decks, especially.
I think two treasures are kind of they're underrated in that. A Sol Ring creates 2 mana when you tap it, but there's not a way for that mana to now be saved for next turn and the turn after. And Ragavan can do is come down on one, hit somebody, create a treasure. You don't use a treasure yet. Hit somebody, create a treasure. And now on turn 3, you've got 6 mana.
Yeah.
And that allows you to make a play that is maybe more powerful than if you had used 2 or 3 mana on turn 2 and then 3 mana or 4 mana on turn 3 or something like that. You can just make one really big play, which can often just, you know, unbalance the table in a really powerful way.
Yeah, not to mention that I feel like in the comparison between this and Sol Ring, if you're looking at an early CDH game, the biggest annoyance, I would say, is an early Mystic Remora. Mm. If I see a Mystic Remora in my winning hand, I'm keeping that hand. I will do my best. One lands, no lands, I might go for it. So
this is a creature?
This is a creature. It doesn't hit that Mystic Remora. Yeah. That's, you don't realize how huge that is.
No, I do. Yeah.
Because essentially, if you're playing...
Almost all early plays in both regular Commander and CDH are non-creature.
Exactly. And then if you're sitting at my CDH table, if somebody plays that turn one Mystic Remora, it's going to slow the game down. It's basically like a stasis effect where everyone's going to wait and... Till they maybe they play out their like Elvis Mystics, Deathrite Shaman, stuff like that.
They're gonna try and punish them by making them play the upkeep a bunch and not get anything for it.
Exactly. Yeah. They're not gonna just run into it like some casual players do because they need the value. We don't need the value. If we want to slow down the game, slow it down, whatever. So avoiding that potential trigger is huge.
It's interesting the comparison between casual and CDH here, and I think maybe one of the reasons that casual players have we may not see Ragavan as much in those circles is because they're worried that like by turn 3 or 4, it's a 2-1 in it. I don't have a way to sort of get it in there. And now it becomes sort of less effective. And I think that, you know, that may be causing some people not to use it. I think it's incorrect because I think the card is very powerful even in those circumstances. But what would you say to the players that are sort of thinking, hey, in casual circles, there's more creatures earlier. And so it might just get blanked by the board.
Without a doubt. Yeah, I definitely... That's why I think it's situationally better than Sol Ring. In a CDH game, maybe like a year or two ago, this thing was insane. But now that we see a lot of dorks, a lot of little hate bears, that they're going to get these things away and they're going to be hard to get rid of. But essentially, I would say that the value that you can achieve before those get played out, or even if you don't necessarily get the swing value, the amount of value you can draw just by having them on the board, you're going to draw all of that creature removal that everybody started with it in their hands. All their swords, all their paths, all their... anything that can remove it, Abrupt Decays, anything like that, it's going to hit this guy.
Yeah, they're going to have to waste it on this thing.
You have to get rid of it, yeah.
I would also say that you only have to get one card off Ragavan that you play
to make
before
it worth,
it's been worth it, because it's replaced itself now. And so all the treasures and everything else, and if you've gotten a couple of cards off it, is gravy. And it's very hard to imagine a game where Ragavan comes out turn 1 or even 2 where it doesn't at least equal itself in value. Get you one card that you play before end of turn and get you a couple treasures. And of course, there's many games where just one player or two players just don't do anything that can block it for 4 or 5 turns. And then those cases, the value is insane. You've now virtually drawn 2 or 3 cards, created 5 mana from a one drop. So yeah, I really like this card. I like that you called it out. Thank you for bringing it to the attention of the casual people out there who are playing it.
For sure.
Okay, and now we are here with Damon Lenz. Damon is one of our new junior editors here. In fact, he works on the podcast, so you might even be editing yourself later.
Yeah, that'd be pretty wild if I get to edit myself.
How do you feel about that? Yeah.
I'm pretty excited for that. I will say something that I noticed. You actually warned me about this.
You're going to hate the sound of your own voice.
Exactly. I hate the sound of my voice. And I'm like, I hope I don't sound like that in real life. But apparently, here I am.
That is how you sound, Damon. I hate to tell you. But one good thing, the more you do this, the less you care about the sound of your own voice. I've gotten used to the sound of my voice coming through speakers. So don't worry. It gets better.
Fair enough. I look forward to that.
Okay. Let's talk about your favorite card from 2021. Do you want to read it? You are an overachiever. You actually brought the card.
Here we are, right here.
Oh, you bought a fancy version of it.
Yeah,
too.
That's right.
All right, what is it?
We got Sword of Hearth and Home.
Yeah,
so it's a 3-mana artifact equipment, 2 to equip. Equipped creature gets +2/+2, has protection from white and from green. And whenever the equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, you exile up to one target creature you own, search your library for a basic land card, and then put both cards onto the battlefield under your control, then shuffle.
So it flickers a card you own, and it goes and finds a land card. And then it doesn't even put that land card onto the battlefield tapped. It puts it in untapped.
Yeah, that is actually huge, because like a lot of the times with these swords, you end up playing them on turn 5. That way you can play it, immediately equip, and then use it. That way it's not sitting on the battlefield, you know, and your opponents are hungry to remove it and you don't even get a use out of it. The nice thing about this is it gives you one of that mana back. So if you have Ponder, Preordain, any
of the Plowshares
swords, any of the plethora of one drops that we play,
Swan Song,
yep, you can play it on that turn, or you know, if you end up playing it on a later turn, then that's just an additional mana that you get to use that turn.
Yeah, so. Often it becomes actually quite an advantage if you swing once or twice, because it ends up giving you 2-3 extra mana, that untapped part of it that you wouldn't otherwise normally get, which is pretty powerful.
Right, exactly. And that's like a big thing with this card, and one part of the reason that I picked it is white especially needs ramp.
Yep.
That is something that we've talked about many times on the show. That's something that the players have been asking Wizards for. And this is a great non-green way to ramp. Any color can get access to this because the artifact is colorless. And it's just a consistent ramp spell. It's very similar to Sword of the Animist in that way. That one's 2 to play, 2 to equip, +1/+1, and it gives you the land on attack, whereas this is combat damage. But this, for one additional mana, gives you protection from 2 very relevant colors. White being one of the best removal colors in the format, and green just being one of the most played colors in the format.
And probably the most powerful color in the format now. Blue has something to say about it, but still.
Exactly. And then on top of that, that land entering the battlefield untapped is huge. There is also a little sneaky upside with the blink. It does say own, not control. So you can actually steal back your creatures if your opponent steals it.
If they like Gilded Drake your thing or something, that actually comes up in a large number of games where you're like, oh, I'll blink my thing back, and it comes back under owner's control because it says owner.
That's correct. Yeah,
I've had that happen to me a number of times now where you're like, oh, crap. So, okay, I can't steal anything from the sort of Hearth and Home player because they just get it back.
Yeah, and that's kind of a sneaky thing. This will become less relevant as this card sees more play, but a lot of people don't know that's how the card works. So like I was playing a game here, somebody cast an Expropriate, and I was playing my Tovalar deck, and I have this in my Tovalar deck, and they stole one of my werewolves, and I had this on the battlefield, so they could have stolen the sword. Didn't realize, so then the very next rotation of just like equip, attack, hey, I want my werewolf back, and it was a beautiful thing.
Because usually it says controller, not owner, so it's an interesting, and that's how Magic works. These little one word changes change the card vastly. That protection from green and white I find to be very powerful too, because it just often allows you, there's one player that just is only has green creatures, only has white creatures, and you can just get in for free, so you know you're going to get in there. So it kind of mitigates the fact that the difference between Sword of the Animus is on attack and this is on combat damage. It tends to be not that hard to get in with any of the swords, because they all give protection from 2 colors, and you can usually find a way to make that mean you're unblockable.
Yeah, I actually came prepared with some additional research, so I can actually like support that thought. So out of the top 10 commanders, according to EDH Rec, 9 out of 10 of them are green and or white.
So have at least one of those colors.
Exactly. Yeah. Or if not both.
Or both, yeah.
And then out of the top 100 commanders on EDH Rec, 75 of them are green and or white.
It's mostly the green that's doing the heavy lifting there.
Exactly.
But still, that just means like this is going to make you unblockable a large percentage of the time. And 75 of them, meaning there's, you know, most of us play 4-player commander.
Exactly.
I mean, there's going to be one player at the table almost always that's in at least one of those colors. So
right.
Yeah, and you get to pick on them at the least.
Right. It's honestly great. I've yet to have a game where that protection was not relevant. And even an additional side research thing I did. So looking at EDH Rec at the top removal spells, out of the top 10, 8 of them are green or white.
Wow.
So that your creature is fairly safe.
Most of the main removal that's being used.
Exactly. Because white is one of the biggest removal spells, as I mentioned earlier. And then green even has some heavy hitters. Now, a lot of those removal spells can hit the sword, but at least you're protecting your creature. And that's one additional step that a player has to make.
All right. One last question before we go here. On the leaderboards or the ranking of the sword ofs, where do you think Hearth of Home sits?
Ooh, that is a really good question. For me, I'd probably put it between 2 and 3. And so the top one, I think, is Sword of Feast and Famine. Easily. Hard to get past that.
Yeah.
Very hard to get past that. The one that I kind of go back and forth on is Fire and Ice. Exactly.
I think I'll put Hearth of Home above it. So I would put it at number 2.
Okay. So that's,
I think that putting the land into play is just very powerful. And the blinking is almost always useful in some way. Very few decks don't have a good ETB target for it. And just the side benefit of being able to get stuff back that's been stolen, you know, it tends to be pretty useful. So
yeah, the thing that I like kind of go back and forth on, and it's the reason that I don't want to say for sure this is better than Fire and Ice, is the fact that Fire and Ice gives you protection from red, which means you're protected from almost all the red wraths.
Right, that is Blasphemous actually, Act and Earthquakes and stuff, and are damage based.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's pretty big, but it's definitely very close. And the fact that this new sword is that good, that it kind of is on that level, speaks volumes to its power level.
Tells you all you need to know.
Exactly. And right now, this card is only like $10. So like, I'm picking up as many as I can. I have it in a ton of decks.
It does feel like a card that in 2 years is going to be $30 easy.
Exactly. So, yeah.
All right. So you heard it here. Go pick them up.
Peace.
Okay. Well, Manson, you have... Oh, hey, everybody. Manson here. Manson, do you want to explain what you do really quick?
Hey, I'm the Game Nights editor here at the Command Zone.
Right, you've probably seen Manson on Extra Turns and our other content as well.
Yeah.
Manson, you've chosen a card, probably the card that I would choose as my favorite card.
Oh, yeah?
If you measured it by the most amount of my decks that a card it has got into, then it is this card. Do you want to say what it is?
Yeah, so this card is Douthi Voidwalker.
All right, it is black for a 3/2 Douthi Rogue. It has Shadow, which means this creature can block or be blocked by only creatures with Shadow. It says, if a card would be put into an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, instead exile it with a Void counter on it. And then you can tap and sacrifice the Douthi Voidwalker and choose an exiled card an opponent owns with a Void counter on it. You may play it this turn without paying its mana cost. Why is it your favorite card, Manson?
Well, it's one of the most powerful cards, I think, that got released in Magic this year, right?
Yeah, I think it's up there with other cards we'll probably talk about at some other point on this. it might get my vote for the most powerful card of the year. It's definitely up there.
Yeah, for sure. And like, there's like a lot of combos, I think, that people have been using it with, you know, with like wheel effects or something.
Yeah, so if you wheel with this out, then none of the stuff from your opponents will go to their graveyard. It'll just get exiled because... It says, if a card would be put into an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, instead exile with a Void counter on it. That's kind of one of the big things I think about this card is like, you exile things with Void counters on it, and then they're exiled. Like, there's, you know, you might be able to cash this in and cast one of them, but the rest of them are just exiled, you know, forever.
Forever, yeah.
So that's kind of a big deal because it can just shut off certain decks.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Just the Tacton graveyard hate shut down, I know, a lot of decks.
Yeah, there are so many graveyard decks in the format now. I mean, I have a lot of decks where this just hits the table. I'm like, oh, my deck, it doesn't work anymore. Like, I have to kill that thing before I can continue to do anything else.
Yeah, the funny part is, though, it also works good in graveyard decks in itself because if you do, because it has the sacrifice outlet.
Yep.
So you just sacrifice it and then be able to reanimate it again and do it all over again.
Yeah, because of the void counters that it puts on. It just checks, does a card have void counters on it? It doesn't really care, actually, like a lot of cards do, if it, you know, exiled it before or not. It just says, do those things have void counters? So you actually have access to all the cards that were void countered with it earlier.
Previously, yeah.
Even though it died and it's now coming back. And it says opponents. I really think that's where the mistake, quote-unquote mistake, with the design on this card is if it was symmetrical so that it affected you as well,
right,
it would be a different story. But right, because it actually, your graveyard's fine, you don't exile your own stuff, you only exile opponent's stuff. I guess then it would be broken in a different way where you could like replay your own card twice. Like, you could
true,
cast something awesome and then have it recast it. So
true.
I get maybe why they just, but anyway, the fact that it's opponents only really works in your favor there.
Yeah, it's like super sweet. And you know, you could get pretty mean with this card too if you pair it up with Helm of Obedience.
Oh boy.
So you just instantly just mill someone out.
So would you want to explain how that works?
Yeah, so because of the tacked on graveyard hate for Doughty Voidwalker, none of the cards go into the graveyard, actually. So with Helm of Obedience, it's a 4-mana artifact, X and a tap, target opponent mills a card, then repeats this process until a creature card or X cards have been put into their graveyard this way, whichever comes first. If one or more creature cards were put into the graveyard this way, sacrifice Helm of Obedience and put one of them onto the battlefield under your control. X can't be zero.
So because it says, well, mill the card, and Doughty Voidwalker goes, okay, well, that goes into exile with a void counter on it.
Yep.
Helm of Obedience never sees the cards be put in the graveyard, so it never stops.
Yeah,
it just mills them all the way to nothing.
Exactly. And then the helm doesn't get sacrificed either because there's no creatures.
Oh, boy. It doesn't get sacrificed either?
Yeah.
So then you just do that to somebody else and do that to somebody else?
Yep, exactly.
That's pretty brutal. So those kind of combos make it even more powerful, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm not even doing that, and I put Doughty Voidwalker into, like, you know, 10 decks maybe.
Yeah, I think there's some legacy decks or something that have this combo or something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And you're in black already, so you know you can go find the other piece if you need to.
For sure.
Yeah. So you don't even need to do that, though. I think Doughty just, it's a 2 CMC card. So it's
crazy.
It's crazy efficient. Also, the shadow I've found to be like oddly kind of like a thing because it actually will get in there for a lot of damage. It's not that weird to play it on 2 and then just have it get in for 6 to 9 damage.
Yeah, and some decks, you know, care about dealing combat damage or something, so that unblockable is pretty good as well.
Do you find when you play it that you let it sit out there for the graveyard hate, or do you cash it in for something cool that's been cast, you know, most of the time?
No, I always cash it in for something cool. I want to do big splashy stuff in Commander, right? So I always cash it in, and, you know, maybe I could reanimate it later down the line.
That's how I play it too. A lot of times even just a cultivate or something is enough where I'm like, hey, I'll take the ramp.
Right.
And then, yeah, like you said, you're in a black deck. Almost always you do have ways to get
back. We saw Jimmy do that in the episode of Game Night.
Yeah, where it's like, yeah, it's hosing one player, but what about the other two players? I'd rather get ahead myself, and then, like, you know, I can always bring it back later to hose the graveyard player when I really need to.
Right, exactly.
All right, cool. That is a good one. I approve of this message. Okay, now we're here with Arthur. Arthur, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Josh.
Arthur is one of our editors. In fact, you edit the podcast, so you're probably, very good chance you're editing at least part of this episode.
Right now?
Yeah, editing yourself. How do you feel about that?
It's a trip.
I did it for years and years, so
yeah.
You get more used to it as you do it more. You're also a big Commander player.
Super big.
So let's get into it here. What is your favorite card from 2021 for Commander?
So my favorite card is You Find Some Prisoners. It's a 2-mana card, 1 and a red, and it's modal. So mode 1 is Break the Chains, and it's destroy target artifact. And mode 2 says target player reveals the top 3 cards of their library, puts them into exile, and then you may play a card from among those 3.
Oh, so it impulsive draws one of them, but it also says you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast that card. So you do have to spend mana, but it could be mana of any color. There's also an instant, which is interesting.
Yeah.
So why is this your favorite card from this year?
I love that it's just this little 2-mana card that can really fit into a lot of turns. So you could do it on your turn, you can wait for an opponent's turn. It's just, you're gonna draw it and you're gonna feel good drawing this card. There's always a time and a place for it, and I really like cards like that.
It reminds me a little bit, and I don't know if you've replaced, but it reminds me of a Braid a little bit. Mm-hmm. Where it's like there's usually an artifact to destroy, and that's probably like you're doing that most of the time. But in situations where either there's no artifacts or you just don't care about any of the artifacts out there, or you're maybe digging for a different answer or something like that. Now, this has sort of another mode of, like, you know, dig for an answer from somebody else's deck, but you do get to look at sort of 3 cards and choose one.
Yeah, I think if you're using it to dig for an answer in your opponent's deck, like, that can be a really fun thing to do, but I don't think it's the optimal way to play the card. I do like how you compare it to a Braid. I was thinking about that a lot too. And how do you feel about this versus a Braid? Do you
I think I would prefer this most of the time. A Braid obviously has the 3 damage, so it can kind of kill certain creatures.
Sure.
But there are certain creatures, of course, that it cannot kill.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, especially if you're searching for an answer that is the table wants to happen, you could ask everybody, like, hey, which one of you is most likely to have what I'm looking for. And also just in general, you sort of know what your opponent's decks are doing, and you can usually be smart about, oh, this is most likely to have like something cool that I'm looking for.
Yeah, a number one way I like to use this is a lot of people like to do kind of things with the top of their deck. So big one, of course, is Mystical Tutor, Worldly Tutor, Enlightened Tutor, Vampiric Tutor. Noxious Revival is pay two life or green to instant speed, put a card back on top. I don't like to be this guy, but if someone's about to win a game, put their win con on top of their deck, even Sensei's Divining Top, like rearrange it a bit, like... I gotta be doing something about it, and I really like to hold it and wait for that.
Very smart. Yeah. So like blanking their Vampiric Tutor or something,
sure.
Or just, you know, stealing the card that they got because it's probably awesome. But also just like, hey, you Vampiric Tutor for something, and I'm just going to exile the top three cards of your library, and now it's as if you just basically wasted your tutor. It's not going to do anything.
Yeah, you know.
I don't feel bad if they're tutoring. Why would you feel bad about that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So also, it says play, not cast. Of course, you do need to spend mana, but here's a really interesting way I use it too, is let's say it's turn three. You kept a land maybe with two lands in this card, right? Turn three, you don't have a land. Maybe you were hoping you draw it by turn three. Maybe you don't. Okay, well, I'm going to target probably the landfall or the most likely to have a lot of lands, maybe the green deck, and be like, hey, let's see what top three cards you got. Maybe you got a land in there, and boom, you kept almost like an MDFC of a card. Because you can just take a land from them.
So, yeah, that's really great, actually. I do like smoothing out my games, and one of the ways is cards that like allow you, you know, they sort of work as a pseudo land or can help you keep hands that you wouldn't otherwise keep. Mm-hmm. But then in situations where I have plenty of lands in my hand, well, now I use the other modes on this card.
Definitely. Also, I think it can burn a counterspell, going back to the way that people might tutor for their win. So, if you're a red player, you might not be dipping into like the counterspell colors. And so let's say there's a really crazy stack going on and you know that they're setting up for a win. Maybe you just throw this out. You're like, hey, I know that you've the counterspell. I can't counter what they're doing, but I can do this, which will stop their tutor. So if I do this to burn their counterspell, then you can put it the like nail in the coffin and help out with this stack here. So,
in desperation, you could even target a counterspell player and hopefully get a counterspell on their top three cards that maybe will allow you to interact on a complicated stack.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, I like this card. It definitely feels like it has a lot of flexibility. A card that I think... kind of flew under the radar for a lot of people. I never really thought about it until now.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff you can do with this card. It's really great. It's like the bread and butter of a deck. You put it in there, you're always going to feel good drawing it. I've got it in all my red decks. It's just a great time.
A lot of red cards popping up on this favorite cards of 2021. Yeah. Red's definitely coming up and coming.
Let's go red.
All right, thanks, Arthur.
Yep, bye.
Okay, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Truck. I am Josh's assistant here at the Command Zone. I help around the office, get snacks, handle scheduling. I've been learning a bit of editing too, so that's been a lot of fun.
Truck does a little bit of everything, help us on set, things like that.
Yeah.
Okay, Truck, what is your favorite card for Commander from 2021?
Okay, my favorite card from this year is Tybalt's Trickery. It is one in a red for an instant. To counter target spell, choose 1, 2, or 3 at random. Its controller mills that many cards, then exiles cards from the top of their library until they exile a non-land card with a different name than that spell. They may cast that card without paying its mana cost. They then put the exile cards back on the bottom of the library in a random order. A lot to take in there.
Yeah. All right. So it counters a spell, but it kind of, we've compared it to Chaos Warp a little bit.
Sure.
Where they kind of get a random thing out of their deck instead of the spell that they were casting.
Exactly.
All right. Why is this your favorite card?
Okay. I should preface, I hate counterspells. Counterspells are disgusting. I sit down to play Magic the Gathering, not to play less Magic the Gathering. But if you have to play a counterspell, play the funnest counterspell they've ever made.
It's fun just because it's random and you don't know what the outcome is going to be?
Exactly. Right. Because, so when, obviously, if you want to win the game, you should play counter spells. But it's such a feels bad moment when you're like, I just got this shiny new card. I'm going to slam Bolas the Citadel down. And then counter spell, Force of Will, whatever.
By the way, if someone's playing Bolas the Citadel, you should counter it. Okay, go.
Help a brother out.
So, but this one, at least you get like a consolation prize.
Exactly. You get something. And, you know, sometimes it fizzles. But this is a hard rule of Magic. Better players, top deck better.
That's a hard rule of magic.
Hard rule of magic.
Players, yep. Don't tell Brian Kibler. Okay, so yeah, I mean, this has been fun. I will say most of the times that I've seen it played, in that like it does stop something that was big and scary.
Exactly.
But still, it's like, oh, what's going to happen? And sometimes the thing that's going to happen is still pretty good. So it's like, oh, like.
Yeah, but so the reason I like it is everyone, like, this is a card when you play it, everyone sits up and is like, what's going to happen? What is Tybalt's going to get? Is it going to get you a mana rock at turn right. 8? And you're like, dang it. Or is it going to get you, like, Omnipotence or, right. like, Genesis Ultimatum? There's also one very interesting interaction with this card. And if you've played a constructed format in historic. The last year, historic, standard, modern, where I think, it's banned right now, is you can counter your own spells with Tybalt's Trickery. And in a non-singleton format, it's disgusting because you can build your deck around cheating out insanely powerful spells. But in Commander, it's pretty fair because you can't really make your entire deck like that.
Right, like there's not a lot of Commander decks that says like everything's in here is a 10 drop.
Exactly.
So I'm going to counter my own Rampant Growth and try and get, you know, hopefully get like something insane out of it.
Yeah, so it gives you a lot of flexibility too, because like let's say it's turn 8, you top deck a Mana Rock, a Rampant Growth, you know, ramp spells, turn 8, not really that useful. You have a chance of turning it into any other spell in your deck. So it has a lot of versatility too.
Interesting. Have you countered your own spells much in Commander with this?
Yes. Honestly, a little bit of that is I just don't like countering things in general. So I will take counter spells out of my deck. The only counter spells I run are Tybalt's Trickery and like I opened a mana drain, so I almost run it like ramp, but...
What do you mean, almost run it like
ramp? I run it like ramp.
Runs it like Mana Drain.
Yeah, so when I play Mana Drain, when I'm building my decks, I consider it ramp, not a counter spell. It makes me feel better.
Yeah, that just goes to prove the things we can trick ourselves in our own mind about. Yeah. Okay, yeah. I would agree that I think a lot of people, if they played Standard or Historic or something, they hear you say Tybalt's Trickery, they probably groaned a little bit.
Yeah.
But actually, in Commander, as far as I've seen, it tends to not be a combo card or a card they're really synergizing with their own deck in a lot of ways. It's almost always... They might counter their own thing, but it is more of a coin flip as far as... Because you have to build decks that have mana rocks and things like that in there for the most part, so they can always hit something small.
The combo thing is actually a really good point, because like it matters a lot less because of how random this card is. But if you're playing this against like a CDH-tuned deck, a lot of combo pieces don't do anything on their own.
Yeah.
So if you pull out like a Walking Ballista by itself, that's not too useful. But if you're playing against like Truck over here running like vanilla 5-mana 8-8s, oh,
yeah,
it is.
It's fine.
Such
a counter game. Whatever I'm doing because I have a lot of good things in my deck, and that wasn't like a game winning piece. It was just a big, impactful thing.
Yeah. So, like, it rewards the kind of play.
So, you're just trying to convince other people to play it against you.
Exactly.
That's next level thinking. All right. Thanks, Truck.
Yep.
All right. I am here with Evan, and I realize actually our audience has never met you before. Evan, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah. My name is Evan Limburger. I am the new VFX artist here at the Command Zone.
Yeah. He's recently joined our VFX team. Evan, do you want to, I don't know, maybe tell them about what's the coolest card animation or character animation for one of Game Night's episodes that you've done so far?
Sure. So in the new holiday episode, I did the Atraxa animation.
Yeah, very cool. She pops up from the clouds and that's dope. So Evan doing some really cool stuff here for us. We're excited to have you. Also a big Commander player. We're going to talk about Evan's favorite card from this year, and it is one that is near and dear to my heart. I've gone off with this card, both sides of it, in different episodes of Game Night.
You
so
too, yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
It's Birgi, God of Storytelling. It's 2 and a red to play. Legendary creature god. Whenever you cast a spell, add red. Until end of turn, you don't lose the mana as steps and phases end. Creatures you control can boast twice during each of your turns rather than once.
And she's a 3/3.
And she's a 3/3.
And she has another side, so you can choose to cast either side of this card as an MDFC. The other side is Harnfell, Horn of Bounty, 4 and a red for a legendary artifact. It says, discard a card, exile the top 2 cards of your library. You may play those cards this turn. So you can turn one card in your hand into 2 impulsive drawn impulsively drawn cards.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, Burgi's a little bit nuts because on one side, she provides you with mana. Whenever you cast a spell, you get extra mana. And on the other side, she provides you with card draw. And those are the two biggest staple effects in the format that we want. Why is this your favorite card of 2021?
I like it just because it kind of... So she's one of my commanders for one of my decks I have. And I like the fact that I can either storm off with one side of her, or if I need to dig further into my deck, I can always play the artifact side of her. And I think the artifact side is a great way to dig for answers, ones that I need if I'm in a tight spot.
They also, for Storm specifically, both sides kind of help you in different situations. So if you have... if you're storm in the middle of storming off and you kind of hit, because most Storm decks want to cast a bunch of spells that are cantrips, and that can sometimes work out where it draws you into the cards you need, but also you can hit a gut of lands and it kind of stops you.
Yeah.
So then the other side could help you discard those lands to get real cards.
Oh, yeah.
But a lot of times in Storm decks, you actually just want the extra mana as you're casting the spells to just continue to cast more spells. So she can do that if that's the situation you were in.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so that part is... I've found that to be extremely powerful, and you can often get into situations with Burgi where every time you cast a spell, it's either free or you're actually gaining mana.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when you know that you're real, like your opponents are in trouble, right?
Yeah, especially if you have like a Ruby Medallion or like something to cut the costs of your red spells.
Yeah, if you have her and a Ruby Medallion out, now all of a sudden anything you cast that's two or less, you're gaining mana on
exactly,
it, right?
Yeah.
Which is a pretty nutty situation to be in. That's I mean, it's obviously a very, very powerful card. Which side of the card would you say that you play the most often?
So I actually built a deck based on the horn side, the artifact side. So a lot of like discard effects, rummaging and...
Madness and stuff
like that. Oh yeah, madness and like there's like brawlins in it. So a lot of like pingers.
So your deck is actually built on the horn side.
It started as Burgi and then it switched
to Raphael. But that, so when you said I have a deck with her as the commander, it's built around the horn.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting, because I've seen most decks I've seen are built around the other
side. The storm side of it? Yeah.
So she's often better in the 99, I'd say, on the front side.
Oh, yeah.
Because you want blue in a lot of those decks that are going to storm off a little more. That's interesting to see that the horn side. Yeah. This is a very cool card. Came out in Kaldheim?
Yeah. Beginning of the year.
Yeah. So it's easy to forget about these cards. This is one I don't think we have forgotten about.
I know. It's crazy that this came out a year ago. It doesn't seem like it's been a year.
I feel like red has just really in the last like 2 or 3 years come so far with Dockside and the Burgies and the Underworld Breaches and the Jessica's Wills. Red is like vying for like one of the most powerful colors now.
It's pretty good right now.
Yeah, it's pretty. Stormkill Artist is another one from this year.
Yep.
So very cool card. All right, Evan. Well, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, well, that's all the team members that we are going to hear from on this episode.
So many good cards out there.
Yeah, there's literally stuff that I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about that.
I mean, You Find Some Prisoners is one of my personal favorites. I think that card is just awesome, and it's so flavorful too. I love it.
So hopefully you all heard some cards maybe that you'd forgotten about as well, maybe stuff that you want to slot into your decks. But of course, we're not going to leave this episode without Jimmy and I, you know, throwing our two cents in here and talking about what we think are our favorite cards from this year. Jimmy, why don't you go first?
Sure. So I think one of my favorite cards is from Modern Horizons. It's Damn. It's just such a cool, it's right. Damnation was a card that exists for a long time. And this is a card that white and black just is get, they get all the goodies when it comes to removal. So I love the flavor of the card. I love how it looks. The art, I particularly love it because I have the sort of like the different frame version that I'm going to be putting into a lot of decks. But that one is really awesome for me. And I would say also, it's just great to have the ability to have removal and board wipe on the same card. It in any black and white deck, this is a 2-for-1 of a card in your deck just instantly.
Let me read it real quick in case people don't know what it is. It's black for a sorcery. Says destroy target creature. A creature destroyed this way can't be regenerated, but it has overload for 2 white. So if you you may cast this for its overload cost if you do change its text by replacing all instances of target with each.
Yep.
So it's damn, which is kill one creature, or it becomes damnation / wrath of God.
Yeah.
If you pay the 2 white, which is the wrath of God
cost. And the regular cost, it's not like it's more, and black for a single removal spell is totally acceptable too.
Yeah, this is going in every Orzhov deck or every deck that has those colors forever because, it's
so flexible.
Yeah, the change that occurs when it's like board wipe versus single target removal on a board wipe,
Yeah.
So much more useful.
Yeah. It's going to be a little tough if you're playing like a five color deck because you have to have black, black, or white, white.
Yeah.
But if it's Orzhov and you're not playing this card, damn, you're making a mistake.
Damn.
It also gives me an excuse to say damn all the time on the show.
There are a lot of cards that I considered here, and there's some honorable mentions from our team members as mm-hmm. well. And I'll rattle off a few just so we don't forget about all of them. Meat Hook Massacre, another really good board wipe this year. Amazing. On an enchantment that turns into kind of a Blood Artist-y
Blood
thing.
Artist,
it's kind
yeah.
of crazy.
Yeah.
Circle of Dreams Druid. This is a cradle, a Gaia's cradle on a creature. And how are we haven't talked about it that much. It just shows how many cards came out this year. There's Stormkiln Artist, which I found to be insane. Creates yeah. a treasure token. We cast instants and sorceries. Urza Saga. What a powerhouse of a card.
In every single format you can play it in, it's just like, hello, it's me, Urza Saga.
Yeah, would you like to go find your soul ring? Yes,
yeah,
I would.
Yeah, yeah.
Archaeomancer's Map.
Pretty good for white.
Welcoming Vampire. These are two very good white cards. One is ramp and card draw. The other is just card draw. Endurance is a card I've seen a lot, which you can flash in and get rid of people's graveyards and really hose graveyard strategies. And there's so many of those. None of those are the cards I'm going to name, so I totally cheated.
I also want to shout out the new enemy fast lands or slow lands.
Slow lands.
Just another perfect land for Commander. Exactly what we need.
So I'm going to say as mine, though, Esper Sentinel.
Big surprise there, Josh.
Big surprise.
It's a white card. Just kidding.
The card that draws cards. White has had a really good year when you consider Esper Sentinel, Welcoming Vampire, Archaeomancer's Map, all very strong staple-ish cards in white. I think we've been asking that for a long time. But Esper Sentinel stands above those other ones to me in that it's so efficient.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just so good at doing what it does. I don't think it's equivalent to like a Mystic Remora or a Rhystic Study in that... it is only non-creature, but it also only costs one.
And it's one time per turn as well.
Yeah, so it's limited a little bit. But it does its job. It totally, you play it and you're going to draw, you know, two, three, sometimes four, five, six cards off of it. And I think, you know, comparing it to those other cards can hurt how you really evaluate it. Because
the fact that you can even compare it, I think, is a compliment.
Right. Yeah. It's one mana, so it comes down early. It doesn't have a cumulative upkeep or anything like that. And it will draw you cards. I've never seen a game where Esper Sentinel gets played and just nobody draws any cards off of it. It does happen.
People don't like removing it either. Right.
And you're in white, so it's often easy to augment it, so put a sword on it or something. And now it's really hard to pay the cost, and then you're really going to draw some cards. So I've just found that card to be excellent every time that it hits the table, whether it's on my battlefield or my opponent's. And I love that it's in white. It's just something white really, really has needed. So.
And artifact synergies, too, if you care about that. So it definitely is a powerhouse. White needs it. So badly.
Yep. And I think they've done a really good job this year, not just with white, but with all the cards, you know, of the stuff we talked about. There were so many cool cards, so many interesting effects, and not a ton of like insanely broken stuff. I mean, there's been some, obviously, but I think they've hit a pretty good sweet spot this year.
So. Especially because they released so many cards. Yeah. You would think, right, in the cards that they released the most, you'd have the most like, why did they do that? But we somehow managed to dodge, I think, almost all of that, which is definitely a testament to the design team and a testament to Commander players because they're the reason that all these cards are getting printed.
Yeah.
Mario said as much, so.
All right, to the listeners, what is your personal favorite card from 2021 for Commander? We'd love to hear in the comments. you can agree with us or somebody on our team and one of the cards we said, but especially if you have a card that was not mentioned at all on the show, we'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, definitely. And if you want to pick up any of the cards that we talked about today, well, you better head on over to channelfireball.com/command or use the code command at checkout. Also, if you watch the holiday Bling Miss Game Nights episode, those decks, you have a chance to win them as well off of a eBay thing that Channel Fireball is doing. All of the proceeds go to No Kids Hungry, which is a foundation trying to stop child hunger in the United States. So all good things, many, many fun things and many, many shiny things because it is that time of year. So support the show, use promo code command at Channel Fireball or you can go to channelfireball.com.
If you do want to try and buy the decks or auction, enter the auction for the decks we played on game nights, that's going to be on eBay and those links will be in the show notes. One thing we didn't mention is also all the players in that game. So me and Jimmy, Aaron, and Olivia all signed all the commanders. So,
that's extra cool thing value.
or extra damage card, but only one of them. Not all the masterpieces are signed. Don't worry. We didn't want to damage all of this. And then, of course, big thanks to Ultra Pro for supporting all of our content, and big thanks to Ultra Pro personally for protecting all of my game pieces.
Thank you, Ultra Pro. Yeah. You are the real Santa Claus.
They really do keep all your cards safe. They have the best products to protect all of your stuff. They make awesome playmats. They get the IP from Wizards so that we know like Neon Dynasty is right around the corner. So Neon Dynasty artworks, from what little we've seen so far, looks amazing, and you know they're going to have playmats, sleeves, deck boxes with all of that stuff. They always do really make the coolest stuff. Mm-hmm. So can't thank Ultra Pro enough for supporting all of our content.
Yeah, protects protects it from snow and coal. Perfect for the holidays.
Snow and coal. Yeah, exactly. Right, have you been a naughty boy, Jimmy?
Yeah, I played a lot of bad cards this year. That's probably
why. All right, now it's time for the end step where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. And we have something cool today.
I'm excited for this one. I didn't even know it was out.
Yeah. Well, I just talked to John a couple days ago, and that's how I found out. So nice. John Salmon, who is an old friend of ours and even an older friend of Jimmy's.
Yep. He was the DP for Video Game High School back in the day, and he's worked with us on some Magic stuff here.
Yep. Manza. He's a cinematographer, director of photography, DOP, DP, depending on what region of the world you're in.
Yeah.
Very talented guy. Has helped shoot a lot of stuff here at Command Zone, like the Tavern
for
D&D thing, the Strixhaven College videos. Mm-hmm. So John, and Video Game High School, like you said.
Yeah.
So John actually worked on a documentary over the past couple of years, and it's really interesting because it's called Set, first of all. S-E-T, I think, exclamation mark. Mm-hmm. It's on Discovery Plus, their streaming service. And it is about, get this, competitive table setting.
Wait, I'm sorry, table setting?
Yeah, so there's this whole...
Like, what we have in front, like someone setting the table?
Yeah, there's this whole, like, world, and I don't know if you've ever been to, like, a county fair or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And they will have, like, the prize for the best, like, biggest potato and all kinds of stuff. Well, there's a section that's table setting. So people go and they set a table around a theme, and we're talking like plates and silverware and everything, and they do it up like crazy, and they, you know, win prizes, just like, you know, first, second, third, best in show, that kind of stuff. And so it follows around a lot of people who are kind of big in that world as they move towards a big fairground.
It's like a big competition.
Yeah, exactly. Right, and it's fascinating.
Wow.
As I was watching it, you start off and you're like, these people are crazy. And then...
That's how most documentary, like, you're like, I can't believe they're doing this.
Yeah, I was watching with my girlfriend, and, you know, of course, we're, like, laughing kind of at the people. And, you know, it's a little shameful to admit, but that's just human nature. But then, you know, 5 or 10 minutes in, I'm like, you know what? They're not that different than, like, Magic players. People would laugh at us for, like, spending money on our cardboard or assembling the only Masterpiece deck and how hard that is. And I'm like, I'm not that different from these people. And then, you know, even farther into the documentary, you're like, you kind of start to, like, root for them. You know, and they've got so much invested, but you're like, yeah, I'm like that about things that other people would call weird.
You're like, that's a beautiful table setting. They got scammed. They should have won.
Oh, at the end, we were definitely, like, rooting for certain people and didn't want certain people to win. Yeah. And, like, I won't ruin it, but it's actually kind of riveting. I enjoyed it quite a bit. So.
Well, I love shows like Great British Bake Off, and I love all things that have, like, they're more quaint in nature, it feels like. So this feels like something up that alley.
Yeah. So on Discovery Plus, if you have it, definitely worth checking out. Again, it's called Set.
That's amazing. Well, documentaries are some of my favorite things to watch, so I'll have to check it out. All right. Big thanks to our amazing team here at the Command Zone, everyone that was featured on today's episode, as well as everyone that isn't. So, Arthur Mellicroft, Lady Danger, Manson Lung, Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, Patrick Nan, Jordan Pridgen, Sam Walder, Gaurav Galati, Truck Ty, Jamie Block, Damon Lenz, Sean DeGillis, and Evan Limburger. Woo! All the way around the sun, everyone here. Wow, incredible. Thanks, everyone. We appreciate you all. And big thanks, as always, to Jeffrey Palmer. He does the living card animations that often start, that always start our show on youtube.com/TheCommandZonePodcast, and sometimes behind us here on set.
Yeah, you can find Jeffrey on Twitter at livingcardsmtg. And just want to say a big happy holidays to everyone out there. We will be having another episode next week, but then it'll be New Year's. And then I'm excited for what 2022 is going to bring.
It's going to be a big one. Stay warm, stay safe, and keep your loved ones close by.
Peace.
Bye, everyone.
For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.